Hello and welcome to Hey, Not the Face, with your host, John Nash, and your producer, me, Steffi Haynes. And today, we are going to talk about UFC finances. But first, let's find out how John's been doing this week. Have you seen Dune 2 yet?
No, I honestly, I'm not that interested in seeing it. So.
Oh man, it's really, really good. I mean, it's really good.
Listen, if they're not going to have the Emperor Worm with his face on a worm and another, they're going to stop before they get to that. What's the point? You know, but no, the movie I'm going to see this week, probably, I saw Poor Things a little over a week ago, but the movie I'm seeing this week, I'm going to go see, if you remember the Wings Hauser masterpiece from the early 80s, Vice Squad, going to see it in the theaters again this week.
Oh, so. Okay. How was Poor Things?
It was okay. I'm not going to get too long a critique of it, but I'll say this, the main actors, the top four actors billing, they were amazing. The story was clever. The premise was neat, but it was trying to be too much Tim Burton, and a lot of the supporting roles weren't that good, and it kind of dragged on in spots. So overall, interesting and entertaining in spots, but nothing super special.
Okay. All right.
Though the performances are it's worth it for them. They're hilarious, a lot of them. And they go hilarious for long stretches, so.
Okay, well, maybe I'll check that out. But right now, let's check out some UFC finances. Now, this past weekend, Tyson Pedro fought, and he lost, unfortunately. And during the post-fight presser where he was giving his interview, he lamented on how poor he was, especially now that he had lost and all the expenses and this and that. And he retired and basically said, "That's it for me in MMA. I'm going to have to find another dream." That kind of stung. And there's a lot of debate on Twitter about it. But one of the arguments in Twitter that is seems to be in defense of the UFC is how many millions of dollars are being lost due to piracy. John, can you please lay that argument to rest?
Oh, no, that guy's 100% right. It's because of piracy that the UFC has no money. They have their margins are no, that's absurd, actually. We're going to get into their finances, but they make, when we talk about finances, the UFC makes a ton of money. So there might be piracy. It might be stealing, you know, not stealing, but limiting some of the money the UFC. They could be making more money if there wasn't piracy, possibly, but they are making an outrageous amount of money. On top of that, Tyson Pedro, he is not getting pay-per-view points. So even right. If people are stealing it, he is not losing out. So I think there's a group of fans, probably newer fans too, because it seems to be with newer fans. They are just enraptured with the UFC. They fall in love with it. They fall in the sport. And they can't imagine anything being wrong with it. So if there's when there's ever criticism of the UFC, it's got to be something else's fault besides the UFC.
Indeed. So that's going to bring us into our reports, because TKO reported their 2023 finances. And of course, in that, we get to see UFC finances. If you were to select just one word, how would you describe how the UFC did in 2023?
Record. And I probably should do two words to be more clear. Record setting.
Why do you say that?
Well, because they set records, according to them, they hit records in almost every category, right? So they set records in their revenue. They set records in every category of revenue. They set records in their EBITDA earnings. They also probably were the record profits. So across the board, nothing but records for the UFC. They had the highest sponsorship. They sold out the most number of events. They had seven of the live events that this year were seven of the top 20 events they've ever had in UFC history. So record setting across the board for the UFC financially.
Wow. Insane. How much did the UFC make?
This year they had a 13% increase over last year, and they hit in revenues, total revenues, $5.292 billion with a B. So they made an out, I guess you'd say an outrageous amount of money.
Let's
I mean, just
back.
A tremendous amount of money. And if you go through the various categories, right, their various segments, as they call them, of their revenue, we can look, their media rights and content were up from below $800 million last year to up to $870 million this year. Live events went up 34%, up to almost $170 million. Sponsorship continues to climb. They pointed out before they took over, the UFC's contracted sponsorship was only like $34 million a year. Although in the year that they took over, the year before, the total sponsorship was $57 million. But contracted, now they're up to almost 200. They're going to pass $200 million in 2024. In sponsorship. So across the board, they have found ways to increase their revenue and sources of revenue, all that just tremendously.
Let's go back to sponsorship real quick, because yeah. Mark Shapiro had said on that big phone call thing, that one they have all the time. What's it called?
The earnings call.
The earnings call. He had said that their goal is to hit the 1 billion mark in sponsorships. I have to ask you real quick, is that feasible anytime soon? Or is that something maybe 5-10 years down the road? We're not going to see that anytime in the next few years, right?
Well, if I remember right, and I could be mistaken because I listened to the earnings call just once. I think he was referring to both the UFC and WWE, right? Hitting the 1 billion together.
Okay.
I hope he was. That's just insane. But if it's just UFC, there's no way they're going to. I mean, not for a generation, probably.
Okay.
But for the two of them, I mean, I'd have to look up because as people probably aware, I don't follow the WWE, even though they're in a joint company. I generally just look through and pull out all the UFC information because I cover fighting, I cover boxing and MMA. UFC's MMA, pro wrestling, I don't really cover at all. So I'd have to look at what their sponsorship total was for WWE. But I know it does well. I think it does better in sponsorship than the UFC. So I guess what they're saying is they'd like to double sponsorship within several, I don't know how long a period. That sounds possibly doable, but I don't see how, partly because UFC strategy, they're not getting massive blue chip sponsors. They're just getting multiple sponsors. They like to brag about Bud Light, though.
That's what I was going to ask you. They just have the one blue chip sponsor, right? Bud Light.
Basically, I'd have to go through and see if they have any other ones. But Bud Light, you know, it seems kind of obvious that the reason they came back to the UFC and gave them such a big deal is they wanted to improve their relationship to conservative consumers, because a lot of people had written them off ever since they had some sort of ad campaign with a transgendered person. And so it seems like that's why they scored a massive blue chip sponsor in Bud Light in this major deal, where, you know, I don't know how many times it's going to happen that someone has to come by and polish their right wing credentials by coming back to the UFC. It doesn't seem like a strategy for getting a ton of blue chip sponsors, but who knows? Maybe there'll be a bunch of them that need to do that.
One last sponsor question right quick. Yep. Where would you rank DraftKings as a sponsor, since that's a big one?
That's a fairly big, yeah, that's very important. In fact, I am floored at how, ever since they legalized gambling, I'm stuttering here a little bit, but ever since they legalized gambling on internet gambling, and people, young people might not be aware of this, but you and me remember an era where gambling had no part in sports, really.
That's right.
People would do sports betting, but it was never talked about on the broadcast. It was never advertised. It was something, you know, maybe a few references, but it was not front and center. I am really surprised at how much sports gambling has taken over sports. And in many ways, UFC is, they are looking at this as a prime target for, you know, profit, because DraftKings and them want people betting, and they get much more traffic if there's constant promotion of DraftKings on the UFC events, right? And the UFC benefits. I mean, one of my reasoning is that some of these Apex cards that are just terrible on paper. I mean, the last one was just pointless to watch if you want relevant fights. But a lot of them, I think, do decent because there's so many degenerate gamblers now that we've created that people tune in just for the gambling, the bets they have going on those cards that are filled with guys that are, you know, ranked 18th versus 62.
All right. So let's go ahead and get back into these finances. How much did the UFC make last year?
In profit? Well, we don't know their exact profit, but their EBITDA hit over $780 million, which is, honestly absurd because, and I should explain for people, you know, the people always forget this. EBITDA is your earnings before interest, taxation, depreciation, and amortization. So before those have been deducted, so those are included. So it's not like profit. There's stuff that has to be taken out. And this is adjusted EBITDA they use. So they include into that number stuff that was paid for, but stuff that's like a one-time expense that doesn't really impact, doesn't show what the business is doing. And most of that is stuff that has to do like the transaction, the merger with the UFC, which impacted the UFC much smaller than not merged with the UFC, merger with the WWE to make TKO, which impacted the UFC a lot less than the other entities. But that adjusted EBITDA was $755.7 million. So the $1.3 billion, 58% of their revenue was earnings. So after they've expensed for the fighters and the production and all the other stuff, that's what was left over. Now they have to use that to pay off interest, right? Much of that interest is still paying off the loans they used to give to the Fertittas to buy it from them. Other interest is for the $500-600 million they used to give to Endeavor to stay afloat during the pandemic. So they still got to pay that off. That's a huge chunk. But according to the earnings report, Ari Emanuel pointed out this was the most profitable year for the UFC too. Now, last year they hit $381 million or $389 million in net income. So if they surpass that, right, let's say $400 million, that's just an absurd amount of money that they are making hand over fist. And the only reason TKO, the parent company, didn't show such massive profits is because they had to use a large chunk of it this year that for expenses that had to do with the merger with WWE, like, you know, paying Goldman Sachs, whatever banker to do the merger, to pay out buyouts. And, you know, they buy out executives and all these other people, and there's one-time payments. So after all those, which totaled several hundred million, they still had almost $200 million in net income. Well, next year, they'll probably do well over $400 million.
Jesus.
And what do we get from that? Nothing. I don't get one dime from those profits.
Okay, we're talking about how profitable they were, and you use the term across the board. Is there any single little nook or cranny that didn't see growth?
Well, I would say that didn't see growth, obviously, was I can't think. I'm trying to think of something of the revenue side. On the revenue side, there was – I can't think of something that did not see growth, tell you the truth, because it's on all four segments of revenue saw growth, various instruments. There's got to be something in there, but nothing they spotlighted.
Okay, that brings me to another question. Is that normal?
That everything sees growth?
Yes.
For some countries some companies that are blowing up, it's normal, but it's somewhat surprising.
For as long as it's been, though, like year after year after year, banner year, banner year, banner year, is that normal? The way that they literally are just shooting straight up with no signs of stopping or slowing down. That's what I mean.
Is I mean, what is, no, that's not, I mean, but the UFC has been doing that for years now, basically seeing nothing but growth for, what's that?
That's what I mean, though. I mean, it's been going on for years with no sign of stopping. That just seems unlikely for most companies.
Well, I think what it is partly is the UFC, because they were a new sport, whatever entity, there was nothing but room to grow, right?
Right.
And then they maxed out. They're pretty much a mature sport in America, except for the fact that television agreements for sports have just grown wildly as well. So from on that side, on the TV rights in America, first they had room to grow in America. They matured to America, but now they're finding ways to even get more income, even though maybe the fan base ain't increasing in America, by, you know, holding events at the Apex and making scarcity on tickets so they can get more on the ticket sales, by now partnering with WWE and getting site fees, by getting these TV deals in America because sports rights are so hot, but also by moving into new territories. They have, then suddenly they unleashed the same thing they had with America, where there was nothing but room to grow because the sport was somewhat unfamiliar. I would say the one spot I'm going to guess on most foreign territories, it's been nothing but going up the international market. But I think there are probably, we don't have it broken down market by market. I'm sure if we looked at it, there are several television markets, international ones, that we have seen them rise to a spot and then dip. And the only reason we don't see it overall, because they group them all together and they're moving into new territories. But I'm sure Brazil has had ups and downs in the amount of revenue they have. Probably the same with Japan. So there's several territories internationally where I doubt, if we looked at the granular level of each territory, that they've seen nothing but growth.
Okay. So if you were to put it in a nutshell, how profitable was the UFC last year?
Oh, and I mean, incredibly profitable. They are making, if you look at it, for next year, I mean, just for next year, they predict that UFC and WWE's revenue is going to be anywhere from $2.5 billion to $2.7 billion total together. Or I think more than that, $2.6 to $2.8 actually. And they're looking at, 60%, EBITDA, no, 50, sorry, 50-some percent EBITDA. This is the crazy thing, though. Their cash flow conversion for EBITDA, they're like over 50%. So next year, like for this EBITDA we had this year of $750-760 million for the UFC, they predict going next year that the cash conversion is going to be over 50%. So in other words, after they get the EBITDA, 50% of that's just pure cash that they can think about to themselves as dividends or pay off loans or, you know, do whatever they want with it. And so it's just really hard to stress how profitable it is, especially all the other MMA promotions are losing money. Profitable boxing promotions make nothing like this. They make, they have 10% margins is a good margin for a boxing promotion. And the UFC is just, they dwarf all those.
The big one, obviously, we've got to talk about fighter pay. Where was that?
Well, this is good news for people. This is good fighter pay, and what they call it athlete costs, which, euphemism for fighter pay, that was up $45.7 million last year. And so we saw a dramatic rise, I think it was a 30% rise in fighter pay over the year. And so we've estimated, based on pretty solid source stuff that Endeavor has said, that in 2022, fighter pay was about $146 million total, we estimated, fighter costs. And this year, athlete cost went up 45.7. So now we're at about $192 million in fighter pay costs.
So what is that percentage breakdown to?
Well, last year was all about 13%. This year it comes in, based on the $1.292 billion, to 14.8% of revenue. So it's gone up almost 2%. Of course, it's still under 15%, but still. I mean, you got to take it where you can get it. We gotta win here for once. They went up.
So. John, yep. you gotta tell them, though, how we started at like 20%, and over the years it just keeps going down.
Yes. We had one good year where it went up, but yes, it started before the tough boom. They were paying about 40 some percent of their revenue to the fighters. Then they had the boom. It took off. And because the people were getting paid like they were before the boom, that first year they had like 9 or 10% of revenue with the fighters. Then it went up to 22-23%. And when Endeavor bought in 2016, it was like 22%. And then basically every year it went down after that until this year. It seemed to have been frozen at about $150 million for years. So I mean, I'm going to look at the glass half full, that this is a positive, that we got an increase. But what's interesting, too, we should know it. a part of this increase is very much due to the fact that they had one extra pay-per-view this year, one more event, and that event was a pay-per-view. And on average, they pay more on their pay-per-views, right? Mm-hmm. So, in fact, we know that they're back in, from the antitrust lawsuit, we have disclosure that they estimate what their payouts are going to be for going forward in the future for pay-per-views and non-pay-per-views. And for every pay-per-view, they estimate that their payout to fighters would be about $10.5 million by 2020-21, right around the revenue size they have now. So that seems about correct estimate. So we could probably take away $10 million of that increase in fighter pay is due just to the fact that they had one extra pay-per-view last year.
Wow. Was there anything in there that lets us know sort of like what the fighters were making?
Well, nothing says exactly what the specific fighters are making, but like I said, we can make some guesses about certain things about certain during certain quarters, the pay went up higher. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it's when there's an extra pay-per-view, the pay is going to be higher in that quarter. But it seems like when one of the quarters that the fighter costs went up that they reported last year was the quarter that John Jones fought. So it doesn't take hard to guess that John Jones got a bigger contract than normal. And that, probably changed how much was paid out. And the word was that he got like $8 million. Basically at the same deal that Ngannou was offered, like $8 million plus points. So that the other one is during the summer months, it seemed to go up a bit. And that might be I guess you have to assume maybe that was when Dustin fought Gaethje for that deal. They both got something bigger than what the normal pay-per-view at that time pays. But when we're talking extra money, we're not talking tens of millions. We're talking several million more than the typical fighter, but not tens. It's not like boxing where, you know, if Canelo fought, you'd see instantly, oh, Canelo fought. There's 40 million more on the quarter.
Okay. Okay. Did they voice any concern at all about the antitrust suit?
That is something they reported on. They make a note of it in the SEC filings. They have to make a note of it because they have to warn investors about the risk. They claim they think it's merit. There's no merit to it. They're going to vigorously defend themselves against it and take it to court. I do think it's noteworthy. We know we had last week, there was a reported that there was a settlement talk, right? A mediator was called in, that the two parties are meeting with the mediator. Well, Emmanuel, in the earnings call, he did note that they are going in mediation. And the fact that he brought it up, I think now I think it's going to go to trial still. I don't think there's going to be a settlement. But the fact that he brought it up does give some fuel to the idea that there is kind of serious talks. And he wants investors to know that this might be settled before we go to trial.
Okay. All right. Finally, is there anything else here that you think is worth discussing?
Well, I mean, there's a lot in it, but there's one thing that really caught my eye in the earnings call, and they talked about the impact a single pay-per-view has for the UFC. And what that impact is, when they hold a pay-per-view, their U.S. media rights revenue goes up $20 million. And that implies, obviously, that's what ESPN's paying them for the pay-per-view now, $20 million. Right. So we now have a figure what ESPN's playing. What's also interesting is they brought up that additionally that EBITDA, when they have a single pay-per-view, goes up $20 million as well. Right. Mm. And that one, this is the part that means for every dollar they're getting for ESPN for that pay-per-view, it's going straight to EBITDA. In other words, they're profiting. It's going, there's no expenses for that event from the ESPN. And how is that possible? That really implies that all the expenses, the production costs, the marketing of the pay-per-view, the fighter payments, flying people, all those things are covered by the ticket sales and maybe any sponsorship they have for it. That the ESPN deal is not needed at all to pay the fighters. Everything is taken care of by the other stream revenue streams.
Jesus. And that ESPN deal is to the tune of what? $300 million a year.
Well, that's for the TV deal, the $300 million we estimate. The pay-per-view deal is different, but now that it's up to 20, it's probably rate goes up every year. But in 2024, if they're paying $20 million a pay-per-view, that means 12 months, $240 million just for the pay-per-view, which is separate from the regular, you know, ESPN One, ESPN deal.
Oh my God, it just gets better and better. For the UFC anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you're a shareholder, you got to be happy.
For real, right?
I mean, the best thing, my advice to fighters, the best thing you could do is probably buy shares in TKO.
There you have it. So that's going to put a nice, neat little bow on this episode. So we're going to wrap it up. Follow this guy on Twitter. He is at HeyNotTheFace. You can direct message him there if you have questions, suggestions, comments. You just want to talk to him. His DMs are open. He is HeyNotTheFace@gmail.com if you prefer to use email. You can direct message me. My messages are also open on Twitter. I am at CrooklynMMA. You can email me, Crooklyn949@gmail.com, and I'll make sure everything gets to John. And yes, you know the drill from here. Until next time, please stay safe.
Not in the face! Thank you.